Hey there to all of our automotive and motorsport enthusiast friends. No matter where you are on this big blue marble, you pushed that button once again. You've tuned in to yet another...
Kevin, another fervent episode of V8 Radio.
Fervent?
Yes, sir.
Outstanding. This is... It sounds like something like a slice in the back of my cat would be like a fervent.
Could be.
A wound or something.
That's definitely one way to look at it. Fervent being is characterized by intense emotion.
Oh, my God, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, right? I've been crying the whole time leading up to this episode.
Well, most of our listeners do, so.
For sure. Well, you're in good company. Misery loves company.
Yeah, they see that pop up on their subscription thing, and they get fervent.
Yeah, they do.
Well, this is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm Kevin Oostie, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark.
And I'm wiping the tears from my eyes from my fervency.
Yeah. Or it's a fur allergy from the cat.
Yeah, it could be that. Could be that. Yeah. There's four of them around here.
I know. Yeah, it's crazy. And a tiger.
That's right. Sitting right behind me. Took me 2 seconds to catch that one.
Well, you're Mr. GTO. You'd think you'd be up on that kind of stuff. We have a tremendous show this time. Tell them about it.
Do we? We have shout-outs. We have topic discussions. We've got it all.
That's the old way to screw somebody up with a knock-knock joke.
Is that right?
You ever do that? Uh-uh. You can try this with your daughters one day. Normally, a knock-knock joke comes out of left field. Hey, knock-knock. And yeah, you go, who's there? Right? Well, if you ask somebody to tell you a knock-knock joke, it flips it, and that doesn't work. Hey, tell me a knock-knock joke. And they go, knock-knock. And you go, who's there? And they're like, I didn't prepare for this. I have no idea.
All right. Nicely done.
Yeah. What also is nicely done on this show is the automotive trivia contest that we have.
Oh, man. The king beginning. Of segues. I love it.
Every episode. Where we throw out some kind of automotive-related trivia question at the beginning, and we rely on everybody playing along as at-home players, as they used to call them with the Bozo Circus show.
That's right.
And we'll throw the answers out at the end. Chances are the correct ones will come out, not as guessed by us, but because... we've written them down ahead of time.
Right.
So do you have a trivia question for this episode?
I do have a trivia question for this episode. So here we go. All right, Kevin. Who was a driver for Alfa Romeo before founding his own car company? Who was a driver for Alfa Romeo before founding his own car company?
My mind goes to Enzo Ferrari.
Does it?
So that's where I'm going to go.
Wow.
Done. I have no idea if I'm
right.
Whoa. That's what I'm going to say.
Kevin says Enzo Ferrari. Final answer.
That's it.
All right. It's in the books.
Boom.
Right on. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
There you go. All right. I've got one for you.
Lay it on.
Also, easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Okay.
What American car company sold the Firefly? And the bonus points, who manufactured that vehicle?
All right.
What American car company sold
such
the fire
a jack
fly.
Off.
You did it to me.
I did. Well, you were doing anything. I had to fill the air.
I was.
You're pondering.
Correct.
Like, is this a trick question? Because this is too easy.
I was consternating. I don't even know if that's a word, but I was doing it.
It is now. All right. What American car company sold the Firefly?
Yes.
This smells like a recycled question. For some reason.
It might smell like that, but I don't think it is.
No, okay. The Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Bonus, who built it? Who manufactured it?
Who manufactured it is the bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wouldn't they? Would they not be? Well, they wouldn't have to be one and the same. Okay.
I don't know.
All right. The Firefly.
Yes.
Can you at least tell me what class of car the Firefly was? Was it a
sports
car?
High class car.
Was it a high class car? Was it a luxury car? Was it a sports car? Was it a full size? Or
okay, all right. So there was a whole bunch of different questions in that criteria statement there. All right. So to some, it could have been a luxury car.
Okay.
To some, it could have been sporty. You know, it all depends on your personal preference, I guess.
Cut.
But was it a full-size car? No.
Okay.
I'll give you that. It was not.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
So the answer is, knowing that.
Well, that changes everything.
Yeah, I could tell.
So what American car company sold the Firefly? Darn it. The heck here. Something tells me I've heard of this before, but oh my gosh, my recall ability is just in the toilet today.
Are you envisioning Tinkerbell?
Maybe. What's coming into my head is
Alice
a skybird. Is a skybird. Like a firebird. Skybird.
Skybird, yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah, right?
And that was a Pontiac, right?
Yeah,
like,
yes, it was.
Made off the Chevy Monza platform?
No, it's a Firebird made off the Chevy Camaro platform. A Skybird was just a sky blue Firebird.
Wasn't there another car that was called
the Sunbird?
I guess I'm confusing the Buick Skyhawk and the Firebird.
Maybe.
The Sunbird and the Skyhawk.
Yeah, the Sunbird and the Skyhawk, I think, shared the same platform.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And the Monza, I believe.
Yes, Chevy Monza.
There we go. Skybird, yes, was the blue. Yeah, right. The blue bird.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're talking
that's
about.
That's not
though,
what
so.
We're talking about here. Kevin, you're throwing me off.
This is the Firefly.
Firefly. What American car company sold? And you're not going to tell me if that American car company is still in business or not, are you?
Now, why would I do that?
That's because you are a nice guy and you want me to succeed.
I gave you that it's not a full-size car.
Okay. Okay, all right, enough of this. So Kelly's probably screaming at me right now, just answer the question.
Yeah, she hasn't even heard the show yet. And she's probably all
she's wild, already, so. She is. She feels it. I know it. Okay, so I'm going to say the American car company that sold the Firefly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just wing it. Just say Studebaker.
Studebaker. Baker.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'll say they manufactured it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Studebaker.
That's a...
wrong answer.
That could be very clever there.
Yeah.
I see what you're doing. The Studebaker Firefly.
Yeah.
Good outstanding.
Lord.
Okay. Well, we'll find out at the end of the episode.
Certainly. Can't wait.
Yeah. Right.
Can we be done? Oh, boy.
Well, okay. We can't be done. We've got so much stuff here.
So
on our
much
plate.
Content today.
Yeah. So you did mention some shout-outs. We are very happy that people are tuning in and subscribing and sharing their thoughts with us. Mr. John McCarthy came to us from the Facebooks, and he said, "This is a great podcast. Spread the word."
Right on.
Which we appreciate, and so we... We do spread the word, but it's usually just to you and I on this. So spread it beyond your circle, I guess.
Yeah.
But Mr. McCarthy is, he was kind of going along for the ride with some of the stories on my 70 Riv, because he has a cousin, a sister car, which was a competitor, but he's got a 70 Ford Galaxy, I believe, with a 429 in it.
Nice.
And it has he shared some pictures of the car on the V8 Radio Facebook page with its super 70s space age dashboard.
Nice.
It's not like 60s space age with chrome and rocket things.
Sure.
It's like a big plastic tube.
Oh,
with
brother.
The gauges. It's cool looking though. I mean, it's a neat thing. I mean, the car was, it's big, it's a big two-door.
Yeah, sure.
And the dashboard, you know, you know what a dashboard looks like.
Looks case, like a dash in this over case, by there. Ah.
It goes you know, all the way to the windshield, except where the driver is, the instrument panel area protrudes from the windshield like halfway back the car to where the where the driver's seat. It's got a really deep tunnel there. It's pretty
cool.
It is cool. Those cars are cool.
That's
you don't see them very often.
No, you don't.
So thank you, Mr. John McCarthy. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for spreading the word and taking the time to reach out.
That's right. So we we heard another very interesting response, and this was actually a comment on the V8radio.com website.
Yes.
Which, since we did the revamp on it, you can now leave comments. And there's an interesting note there, too, because you don't... I think you got to leave your email address, maybe... to, so that it's just not all completely full of spam.
Oh, I got you.
On the comment side.
Right.
And yet, it fills up with like 20 or 30 spam comments a day at least.
Brilliant.
And we've got a filter on there, so they don't get published right away. You have to physically
approve.
You know, approve the comments. So we invite you to go to v8radio.com, leave a comment. Don't be surprised that it doesn't appear that second.
Gotcha.
Because we have to... disqualify all of the bad stuff. Mm. And there's been some bad stuff, man.
The not proper content stuff.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The thing that makes me feel better is that content doesn't seem to originate from this country or any of our countries that have strong V8 radio listenership. So that's good.
Wow. Well, that's great.
Bunch of high class people.
Yes. Firefly type people, very high class.
Full on
Fireflies.
So Mr. Mark Geringer was commenting on our trivia question about the flat plane crank recently, a few episodes ago. And he says, great episode. As an automotive noise and vibration engineer, which is, you know, if you think about that, we casually chase noise and vibration, I guess,
right.
It's NVH, right? Noise, vibration, and harshness.
Sure.
Is the NVH.
Okay.
And you know, I found myself the other day driving my Buick, and it had a little squeak, which was quickly fixed by folding up the last fast food receipt into a wedge and jamming it in between the dash pad, and that promptly stopped the squeak.
Right? Love it. Improvise, adapt, overcome.
Yes. Well, Mr. Geringer cannot do that because he's a true engineer. So he said he loved the flat plane crank trivia question, and he just wanted to add a little more detail to the balance explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, nice answer, Kevin. So he's really saying, you guys are full of crap. Let me help you out.
You guys clearly need my expertise.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong.
I'll sugarcoat it and say, hey, good answer.
Thank you, Mark.
I like what you said there, but.
But.
The more common cross-plane crank V8 with counterweights is balanced for both primary, which are once per revolution imbalance forces, and secondary, twice per revolution imbalance forces. And this results in a very low vibration and is a big reason why it's used in most passenger vehicle applications. The flat-plane crank V8 without counterweights is neutrally balanced for primary forces, but is not balanced for secondary. This causes flat plane crank V8s to have a higher level of secondary or twice per rev vibration, which is not a big concern for race engines, but generally is not wanted in passenger vehicles. So, is the flat plane crank better for balance? Yes, because it does not need counterweights to counteract primary imbalance. And no, because it has secondary imbalance that is not present in a cross plane V8. And he shared a link to a video that explains it all, which I made it through. So a great simplification, which I would have easily shared had I understood the first time you asked me the question. But I fully get it. You know, so once a thing gets spinning, that secondary vibration comes in, and it's one of the things that allows that flat plane crank to be so light because it doesn't have those weights.
Correct.
Which makes it high performance, but it gets the shakes a little bit up at higher RPM. And, you know, somebody who paid a lot of money for an exotic, daily driving vehicle wouldn't accept that. So there you go.
Very good. Thank you for the great explanation, Mark, and for keeping us honest.
Correct. And, you know, reading this and watching that video, so you can come to the V8radio.com website and see his response and click on the link, because the video is pretty cool.
It is cool.
All that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, that guy has a lot of good videos and explains a lot of, has a good, I mean, he's an engineer, so he really helps explain the dynamics of God dang it, the heck am I trying to say? He's able to explain in layman terms how to, you know what, we're going to skip this part. I'm losing my mind.
I'm with you. I'm just, you know, along for the ride. I want to hear
nope.
Mr. Q-Ball explain.
Not going to make it to print, baby.
Damn well better.
It's been a long day, what can I tell you? I apologize, folks. You expect more out of me than this, and I'm trying to deliver.
Yeah. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, yes, that YouTube channel, I forgot what the guy's name is, but...
I think the channel name is Engineering Explained.
Makes sense.
Yeah. There you go. That's what I was trying to say. He explains aptly engineering.
Noted. Right on. So there's a little bit more I want to throw out there. We started doing our cruising song of the episode, and we got a suggestion from somebody, a guy named Jim Laughlin, who said, hey, go check out Eric Tesmer. You can find him on YouTube, T-E-S-S-M-E-R. And I did check out Mr. Tesmer, and it is some great cruising music, a lot of good instrumental stuff.
Is it cool? Right on.
Talented guitar player, I believe. So that was cool. Thanks for the suggestion there. I believe we'll throw out another cruising song of the episode pretty soon.
Nice.
And the last one is week and a half ago maybe, I had the distinct pleasure of being a guest on another podcast.
What?
I know.
How dare you, sir?
Well, you were asleep, I think.
I must have been.
This was the Playing in Traffic podcast, which is produced by our friend Mr. Lewis Lee and also co-hosted by Terry Wilson, Coverman 66 on YouTube, guy with the garage shop doing all the LS projects.
Okay.
Terry's a great guy, and so is Lewis, and there's four or five other people on the podcast at once, and it was... sane. It wasn't like craziness.
It wasn't like a morning zoo kind of a thing.
Yeah, with that many people. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Great guys. A lot of good topics were covered. I appreciated the invite that I got from Lewis to join. And you can find that on, I think you can find that on YouTube. Just go back to Playing in Traffic and they have archives and you can find that one.
Okay. I'll check it out.
But one of the topics that was kind of fun is we, of course, talked a little bit about NASA and the Apollo program and Mercury, Gemini space programs and whatnot. And I think you and I have talked about the 63 Pontiac Catalina convertible on this show before.
Yes.
That NASA used to basically fly a kite.
Yeah. That lifting body plane.
Right. So... NASA in the early 60s came up with this concept that eventually became the space shuttle. And it was kind of a delta wing vehicle. And they wanted to see if they could fly something home that wasn't a splashdown. It would be something that you could, a plane type thing, which, like I said, turned into the space shuttle. But the early prototype was called a lifting body. Mm-hmm. And it was this little, not a very big, I mean, I guess it weighed like... 4,000 pounds or something, 3,000. It was pretty heavy, but it was a one-man triangular-shaped thing with wings. And in order to test the theory, they had to get it off the ground. And they chose to do this by putting a tow rope behind a specially prepared 63 Pontiac Catalina convertible.
God, and that's so great.
Out at Edwards Air Force Base, they would hammer down and get fast enough to be able to tow this thing. And it would fly like a kite off the back of the car. And of course, some of the modifications to the car were actually done by Bill Stropp and by Mickey Thompson.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, at Stropp's Race Shop. And what they did, it was a 421 four-barrel with a specially re-geared four-speed transmission. And the purpose was they had to be moving, you know, to be able to get this thing off the ground.
Sure.
And the lifting body had this real basic, almost looked like a tripod with wheels, and you got fast enough and it would pick up. So they recurved the power band on this 421 to where it was making maximum torque at like just over 100 miles an hour.
Holy cats. I mean, yes. That's where you need it.
In that case, it's exactly where you needed it. Yeah. So the car had been clocked upwards of 150, 170 miles an hour.
Wow.
And the story is that it was built in California, and they were testing this in California, but Nevada had no speed limit at the time. So they would go to the highways in Nevada and just hammer down and calibrate the speedometer and try and, you know, high speed test this thing. And then they'd bring it back to the Air Force Base at Edwards in the Dry Lake and would go run this car and tow the thing. It also had the passenger seat was turned around so they could look out the back. Mm-hmm. And then one of the rear seats was taken out and one was mounted sideways so they could see. And it had kind of a roll bar and some safety stuff. Well, one of the guys on the playing a traffic show was aware of this car, which was pretty cool. And it rekindled some of my interest in this thing. And I have learned that it has since been found.
Really?
Yes. And apparently it's now in the collection of the Air Force Pilot Test Museum.
I never knew there was
flight museum. Flight Test Museum, I think it's called. Not Test Flights, Flight Test Museum.
Okay.
And that is a new facility at Edwards Air Force Base, which is, you know, hour and a half north of L.A., if that.
Yeah.
Palmdale, north of there. And apparently they've acquired this thing and are in the process of restoring it. They're going to have it on display out there.
That is awesome, man.
It's super cool.
They need to run it one more time before they put it on display.
Well, I think so. And, of course, what happened is it had government plates on it, and it had NASA, like, stenciled on the door.
Mm-hmm.
But the engineers and the guys on base would take this thing out cruising all the time. You know, I mean, this is the car to use.
Oh, yeah.
And one guy tells a story about getting pulled over, speeding in the thing, and the cop just couldn't understand how this 421 Catalina convertible that's barreling on the highway had government plates on it. You know, like, how'd you pull that off? So they got in trouble and the car got taken away from them and it got sent to, I don't know, Langley or some other, you know, Air Force base. So they didn't get to play with their toy anymore, but it is apparently returned home and there's supposed to be a brand new building at that museum, 70,000 square foot. And the claim to fame is that this is where, like, most of, if not all of the early test flights that turned into space flights happened, was at Edwards.
Mm.
So Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier there and, you know, in the X-15 and, or the X-1.
X-1, yeah.
Before the X-1A. And so that, you know, they've accumulated a lot of these early experimental planes and stuff. So my problem is the website that I landed on was their official site, but it hadn't been updated since like 17 or 18.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know if the building got finished yet. Mm. And I don't know if the car got finished. So,
well, what they ought to do, and this would be a great public relations stunt, is they restore the car back to its original power levels when it was doing its duty, restore one of these lifting bodies, and then tow it, and then just recreate the whole thing again for
there
everybody.
You go. There
I
you
would
go.
Pay money to see that.
They could do it like twice on Saturdays. And
yeah.
You could buy tickets.
Stick around for the next show, folks.
That's right. Well, there There you go, man.
That'd be amazing.
It would be pretty fun. Yeah. And I don't know if I was subliminally exposed to that as a kid, but in the 80s, okay, this is like 1986.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to grow up around computers, and we had, you know, Apple IIs in my grade school since 77. And I was, at the time, in 86, I was using a Commodore product.
Nice.
And I had a 300 baud modem.
Man.
Oh, it was screaming.
That's screaming.
You know, connected to the telephone line. And I found this bulletin board service online. This is before the internet, per se. This is, you just call up these random servers and, you know, try and find pictures and whatever. And I downloaded this black and white scan. It was a very early scan of an 86 Corvette convertible.
Cool.
And I printed it out with my dot matrix printer. It was a Canon PW1156A, wide carriage, near letter quality.
Wow, you had all the top tier toys.
Dot matrix printer. Yeah. I think it came free when you bought the other thing. And it took like all night to download this black and white picture. And it took like another 2 hours to print the damn thing.
You could have mailed it and gotten there sooner.
Oh, yeah, but it wasn't as cool as, you know,
oh, right.
being a computer dork in 1986. And I remember sketching this Corvette convertible. I'm just looking at this thing, and I sketched a kite coming off the back. And I wrote auto kite across the top, you know, and it was like, I don't know if I was trying to subliminally pioneer a sport. Or maybe I had seen the lifting body thing in a different lifetime and put them all together. I don't know. But.
Well, I think where a lot of kids, kids our age, have seen that lifting body was in the opening sequence of a $6 Million Man.
Because this is true.
Is what the spaceship was that Steve Austin crashed, and you saw the footage of it crashing into the lake bed where he was barely alive.
That's it.
But I remember seeing that, and then later in life, you know, learning about the lifting body. I'm like, that's from the $6 Million Man.
That's Steve Austin.
Holy cow.
We can rebuild him.
We can.
We have the technology. There you go. So that's a long way of saying, if you're in Southern Cal and you're looking for something to do, go check that out and let us know if it exists. How about that?
Yes, please.
And I got all geeked out this past week because... with the SLS and the Artemis program, NASA basically has a date that we're going back to the moon.
Do they?
Yeah. And I was like, you know, and I know this is a podcast about cars, right? Mm-hmm. I'm working on that. Give me a minute.
Well, astronauts had Corvettes, so there's a connection. So zip it, everybody. They did. And shut up and listen.
That's the tagline for today's show.
Shut up and listen.
I like the whole thing. Zip it, everybody. Shut up and listen. Oh, nice. So anyway, I was born like a week before the final moon landing in 72.
Okay.
So I obviously don't remember that. And now we're... you know, 50 years down the line, and okay. just kind of in this window of that already happened and got shut off. Then I'm born.
Right.
And I, you know, I get super excited reading about it and seeing the movies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because I understand, you know, the little that I understand of machinery and flight and everything else and teamwork and the ability to pull people together and make that happen. It's one of the most amazing things of all time. So there's been little blips here and there. The space shuttle comes, you know, and does its thing. And the orbiters are great. Research facilities, very cool. It's not the same as going to the moon.
You're right. It's not.
Even just the fundamental design of the craft, you know, the Saturn V rocket that took them to the moon is, what was it, 6 million horsepower. I mean, it was the most powerful thing ever created.
Yeah. F1 engines. They don't mess around.
No, yeah, 5 F1 engines built by Rocketdyne, and it's the biggest hot rod ever.
It really is. It's amazing. Yeah.
And my buddy Grady and I were talking the other night, and he was asking if if this comes together and I had the chance, would I go? Would I go up in space and be an astronaut?
All day.
Yeah, you would. I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
I would not.
Why not?
To me, that's not the excitement. Don't get me wrong. That would be insanely exciting. Probably be too much for me to handle. But the concept of being, you know, thigh to thigh with somebody in a capsule when you can't even stretch your legs for a couple of weeks in space, not my thing. What is my thing?
Not my thing. I'm good over here.
Other people do that. They got to go in centrifuges and they got to be spun upside down and they got to hold their bladder and all that stuff. That's great. But for me, the concept of, again, building the machine and designing it and inventing math and, and coming up with the teamwork and managing all that, that to me is, and then of course the great sense of community that the world comes together and says, oh my gosh, we got a guy up there. You know, so I'll be happy on the ground looking up. That's fine.
Okay.
And then this past week, what does NASA do? They roll out the SLS, the new space, I don't know what it's called, the Space Launch System, with the Artemis rocket on it. And this is a moon-going vessel. That's its only purpose.
Wow.
And when I say they rolled it out, it was at Cape Canaveral, and they rolled it out of the big giant NASA building the same way they rolled out the Saturn V on the transporter, the big giant crawling thing that looks like it's out of Star Wars. And it went the, I don't know, 4 mile trip down to to launch pad 39B or whatever the heck one they're using. And this is different because, you know, obviously SpaceX and Blue Origin and all the other space companies are using that stuff all the time.
Right.
This is designed to go to the moon. That's what this is for. So this year is the rollout, and they're going to do a wet rehearsal, they're calling it. So they're going to fuel this thing on the pad, just like they were going to launch. And then its first launch is going to be an unmanned launch.
Okay.
The second one next year is going to be a manned launch, a lap around the moon and back, just like they did in Apollo 8.
Right.
And then the one after that is going to be in 2025, and that's the landing.
Did you ever think you'd be able to live to see this?
No, I didn't. Yeah, and, me either. And it, even just talking about it, it's making the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
Because it's like I had resigned myself to accepting the fact that I missed it.
Same. I mean, I'm a couple of years, I'm about 3 years older than you, but I had no concept of it, of the moon landing when I was, you know, 2-3 years old.
Mm-mm.
You know, my mom didn't sit us down and say, oh, look, we went to the moon again for the last time. No. I mean, I read about it just like you did growing up and thinking it was the coolest thing ever, never thinking that we would ever go back. So this is huge to me.
It is. Yeah. No, I agree. And the other fun thing is looking at the compressed timeline of the original Apollo program, they went from, you know, a basic launch test to landing on the moon in less than a year, like a year and a half, basically. Yeah.
Well, think of the whole program. When the Mercury program was launched, that was, what, in the late 50s, early 60s?
Oh, no, Mercury was like 64.
Yeah, well, think about that. 64 to 69
Well, Mercury was 62, and then Gemini, and then Apollo.
Mercury, Gemini. But think about that. Within the span of, within 10 years,
starting
a whole program from scratch,
right,
and then going to the moon in less than 10 years.
Yeah, and it gets back to, I mean, there's so much going on with that decade. And again, I didn't live through it. I know people that did live through it that have their own perspective on it. And they're not, you know, all I know is what I've been fed, essentially. So I have to keep a rational view on this stuff. But the more I study Kennedy, JFK, the more I like this guy. And in the 60s, he was in a position of saying, okay, well, the Cold War, the threat of communism, that's a real deal. And we need some way to stay ahead of these guys, to keep global confidence in us without having a war to prove it somehow.
Sure.
And, of course, the Russians put Sputnik up first, then Yuri Gagarin is the first guy in space. He's a Russian, and we're behind. So all of a sudden, Kennedy says, hey, by the end of the decade, guess what? We're going to go to the moon. We had no idea even how to... We hadn't put a guy in orbit yet.
Right.
We didn't know how to do any of this stuff.
Yeah, no doubt.
All the boys at NASA are like, excuse me?
What? Excuse me?
we're going where
that,
and when?
That was the national equivalent of Kennedy saying, hey, tell me a knock-knock joke.
Yeah, basically, yeah, right.
Wait,
right.
What?
And,
we're not
and
ready.
People looked at him like, you're out of your mind. And then there was this pressure on, I don't even know if they called it NASA yet when he made that speech. It was still the NACA. And all these guys are like, we got to do this or we're screwed. You know, now everybody's looking at us. And their first... You know, launches weren't successful, and we had this big kind of come from behind thing. And at the same time, Kennedy really didn't care. Kennedy wasn't this guy who was like, oh, I want to go to the moon. Mm-hmm. Kennedy's like, this is a tool that we can use to position ourselves politically. Mm-hmm. And his cabinet was like, this is also something that could be a way to generate technology and weapons technology and all this other stuff.
Right.
So there was good, you know, reasons for national security and defense to go.
Right.
But Kennedy wasn't, you know, in the early 1920s sitting in his backyard as a little kid looking up at the moon saying, someday I want to go there. That wasn't it.
No, absolutely not.
And he had to figure out a way to get this country to write, you know, this giant blank check to NASA to just pay for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you had people on the street saying, why are you paying for this when we've got debt, we've got homeless, we got, you know, all these social problems, and you want to go to the moon? So he had that battle and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty remarkable that he said this, and then, of course, he was assassinated, and people stuck to it. They didn't go, eh, well, that guy's done. Let's, you know, never mind.
Well, it was great while it lasted. All right, moving on.
Right, you know, so... So then, you know, growing up and being fed the dramas on the big screen and the newsreels and all the rest, my view is filtered through that. I wasn't here. And I know people in my family who said, you know, Kennedy was worthless, and somebody else said Kennedy was the best, you know, just like any other politician.
Exactly, yes.
But the older I get, the more I've been finding myself jumping on YouTube and watching some of his speeches the contrast to what I think to a lot of today's politicians is that when they asked the guy a question, he didn't look to the prompter or an advisor. He gave an answer because he was not only in command of his knowledge of the topics, but the structure was set to where it was encouraged for him to answer. You didn't get this feeling like who's actually running the country, you know, like a lot of people say today. So, you know, again, I saw this stuff, so I never thought we were going to go back because the landing on the moon fell out of favor with a lot of the voters and, you know, the people that were like, we're spending all this money, what are we getting out of it, and blah, blah, blah. And the shuttle, at least, was a lot of return on investment for putting satellites into space and doing, you know, research. And, you know, the moon is always... Today, we're looking at it as a platform to get to Mars, perhaps, and whatnot. And, you know, interestingly, I really don't care that much about Mars either.
Care that much about Mars either, to be honest with you.
I mean, that's sitting thigh to thigh with somebody in a capsule a lot longer than a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Holy cats.
But I guess just the, you know, again, the physics and the science behind getting something that big off the ground and going all the way there and then coming all the way back safely. So when I heard that this was going down this week, I was like, holy mackerel, I might get a chance to see that. And it totally turned my week around.
This is the first time I'm hearing this. I didn't see any of this news from NASA about this. So this has got me really excited in real time. This is great.
It is great. So the rocket's on the pad right now as you and I are talking, and they're doing their wet rehearsal. At the same time, I always loved watching the old footage because of all the old cars. You know, there's There's the, yeah. the astronauts' wives are there in their Impala wagons and, you know, these big galaxies and all these cool 60s cars.
That is really cool.
It is. Yeah. And the look and, the music and all the rest of it, it's such a hip thing. And today, we're far enough out to where I have time to really get into this.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's not happening tomorrow.
No, I felt that with a lot of the space shuttle stuff, because you and I grew up watching that in school and everything.
Yeah.
But the shuttle became so commonplace that nobody paid attention. Oh, it was launched today. Okay, great.
Yeah, that's weird. I remember the first launch was the whole world was watching. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where I'd see like a news clip, a little blurb, like the space shuttle is landing today. I'm like, I didn't know it launched.
Right.
This is crazy. I mean, and that was when, you know, there wasn't really a big prevalence of cable TV. So you had your three UHF channels and your VHF channels. And so you watched the news at night, and that's where you got all your information. And the big three weren't really covering it.
No, that blurb of the landing became shorter and shorter.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, the headline... And the shuttle landed at Edwards Air Force today. Mm-hmm. Done. You know. And I think a lot of that was planned, too, because a lot of those missions were classified, and we don't know what they were doing up there.
That's a good point, yeah.
And we weren't supposed to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's all part of it. But anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing this program evolve. And the fact that it really became obvious to me as this thing is being rolled. I mean, the craft exists. It's not like a plan. Oh yeah. Right. Someday, you know, this is, it's out there today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on paper. It's real life. It's ready to go. Yeah.
And I love what all the private companies are doing as well. It's not going to bring people together as much as I think another moonshot will. It united the planet when
it did.
Everybody went, oh my God, look at that.
I really hope it does the same thing.
Me too.
Yeah.
That would be, it's what we need.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what we need.
Right. So that was really cool this week alone. And I'll be sure to, you know, I don't know who nobody knows who the astronauts are going to be. They're going to be doing this, you know, in a couple of years.
Right.
But it would be kind of neat to see if they get their dollar Corvettes out of it, like
I really hope they do. That would be just the icing on the cake.
You know, so what I got to do is figure out how to be the conduit for those Corvettes so that we can paint them in our shop.
How good would that be?
How good would that
now
be?
Now that would make your day.
That would make a lot of days.
Yeah.
I got to get on that.
Yeah, call whoever you know at NASA.
Well, all right. So I know a few at GM. I know that.
Okay.
I know some guys
in Corvette.
A few in Corvette racing and whatnot. And after that Playing in Traffic podcast, I got a phone call from a guy named Robert Hartman, who is a rocket scientist at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
All right, Rob. All right.
And he was like, hey, I saw you on that Playing in Traffic thing, and I'm a rocket scientist. I'm in my 60s, and I remember seeing that car and the lifting body thing.
Nice.
And he's a hot rodder, too. And we just talked rockets and cars for a while. Just, you know, guy called out of the blue. So maybe he's our way in.
Don't lose his number. Robert Hartman, you're going to be our guy.
This might take a little doing, but yeah. That would be cool.
Well, you know a lot of people. If anybody could make it happen, I think you could make it happen.
My concern right now is that I don't really want to be delivering electric Corvettes, so we got to do these while they're still...
No, not electric Corvettes.
Still ice cars.
Oh, yeah. Come on. No.
We need to have, like, the biggest Corvette show in the world there that day, that weekend. I mean, we got to, the original ones got to go because they still exist. The 69s,
yeah,
and 70s.
Yeah, they absolutely have to go. Yeah.
And even the one from 59, that's got to go. Yeah. See, this is becoming a thing.
It is. You have a new project. once you get the Cadzilla documentary off the ground, you can start working on this.
Well, I got 3 or so years.
Okay. Well, start now.
It's always good to have multiple plates spinning at the same time.
Well, of course. things get dull otherwise.
Yeah. Well, not around here.
No. No, sir.
If you don't pay attention, you get run over. That's what happens in our business. So that's...
yeah, no doubt.
It's a good thing.
Well, the shop is probably chock full of cars still right now that you're working on.
The shop is. And we're... again, very fortunate to be busy. A lot of cool projects in a lot of different directions. We got some going home and some bigger ones coming in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're really trying to do. Is, you know, we're always trying to, you know, kind of raise the bar and come up with bigger and better projects, not just to be bigger and better, but to involve more creativity,
higher level
of performance.
Yeah, improve the skill set of your guys.
For sure.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of, you know, I mentioned it before, some full chassis cars, you know, roadster shop stuff coming in. Got a few more Corvettes coming in.
Nice.
Yeah. Our usual flow of first gen F bodies and, you know, Camaro Firebirds and second gen Camaro Firebirds and all that kind of stuff. But we got some hot rods, and they've got a 30 Model A in there right now.
You know, no kidding.
Dual quad, small block, chopped.
Nice.
Tudor, which is cool. Uh-huh. We got a 55 Chevy Cameo pickup truck in the shop right now.
I saw that picture. That's killer, man.
Yeah, that thing is killer. So it kind of goes in all directions, which is great, because they all have something. So we're just trying to showcase that it doesn't really matter what you want. We can do it.
Sure. Well, what really caught my eyes, and we talked about this one before, is that, was it a 59 Ranch Wagon that's getting the full chassis?
It's a 57.
57,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's getting that full up roaster shop chassis. That's pretty killer.
It is killer. And there's been, you know, some figuring to do on that one with the fuel system and the brake booster on the firewall because the single overhead cam motor is so wide.
Yeah.
You know, you need to make room for it, but... but yeah, it doesn't matter what you want. We can do it. Hey, did that sound like Kennedy? We choose to build the ranch wagon and the other things in this decade. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Oh my goodness. Here we go.
Yeah, that's bad. Well, in other news, tickets went on sale today for the Street Machine Nationals in DuQuoin.
Yeah, they did.
Looking forward to that. That's, of course, you know, taken over as Pro Street Mecca, and guys are building Pro Street cars to be unveiled there, which is cool.
That's great, man. I love seeing Pro Street coming back.
You know, and it's not so much that I think the cars are killer, and the community is super cool. The Pro Street crowd is really cool. I just love the fact that we still have room for niches in auto enthusiast worlds to where if you're into it, you can still do it. Doesn't matter what it is. And you can find somebody else doing it, too.
Yeah. It takes.
Chances are there's an event for it as well, or you can start one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you just need one more guy to... like what you like, and then boom, you got yourself a group.
Yes. So that's super cool. And speaking of events, Kelly this past week was a panelist.
Really?
And a SEMA function, the Hot Rod Industry Alliance. She's a member of the Hot Rod Industry Alliance committee. And they had her as a guest along with a couple others, kind of on the state of the world with automotive events and car shows. And they had a manufacturer there, basically, a guy from Advanced Plating, I believe, a gentleman from Camaro Central, so a retailer viewpoint, and then her as a shop owner and car builder. And
right on.
It was cool. It was an hour long thing. It whizzed by like nothing, unlike this show.
Well, I bet she kicked ass at it.
She did. Yeah. And it's always funny to me because she was, you know, kind of nervous about it in the beginning, because in her daily life, we're not always discussing the future of car shows and all that stuff. It's a contextual topic, but it's not like she's not out there writing articles about this stuff every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But sure enough, she was able to, you know, contribute tremendously to the whole thing and hang with everybody. And she knew these guys were ready from other things. And it was cool. It was fun to watch.
Nice.
So I was a spectator for that. And it was streamed online the other day. And there's a chat window, you know, and you can ask questions from the crowd and everything.
Oh, cool.
And I just sat back, just let it
happen,
go.
Man.
Yeah. And that was the best thing I could have done.
Yeah, I mean, she knows what she's talking about. She certainly can hold her own in anything automotive related and pretty much anything else. So, yeah.
Well, and I think the smart thing there is that if she doesn't know about it, she's not going to say it.
Gotcha.
Kind of reminds me of that Edie Brickell song, you know. I'm not aware of too many things, but I know what I know, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, my God, you just took me back.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you think of a cruising song for this episode? We got one in the kitty on the...
Yes.
This is, you know, tell me a knock-knock joke.
No. Radar Love by Golden Earring.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's song kind of about cruising anyway.
About,
driving,
yeah.
And speeding and driving all night. My hands
wet.
Wet
on the wheel.
Yeah. Right on. Golden Earring, of course, their other big hit was Twilight Zone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And for years, I didn't know the actual lyric. And at the end, I thought they were saying, when the bullet hits the phone. I'm like, why would the bullet hit the phone, and who would care? That's when the bullet hits the bone.
That's right.
And that's bad.
Yeah, that is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that hurts.
Right. So, been making a few more improvements on the Galaxy. I fixed the horn.
You did you?
Yes.
What
and the
was
house
the
didn't,
problem?
The house didn't burn down around me as I was stuck under the dashboard.
Oh, right.
My fear before that I would wedge myself under the dash to try and fix the horn relay.
And will the house to spontaneously combust.
For sure.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was I decided to start at the steering wheel side.
Okay.
And go down. Figuring that even if the horn relay was, you know, somehow severed under the dash, chances are the contacts needed to be cleaned and the steering wheel, horn button and, you know, whatnot. Couldn't hurt, right? So I unscrewed that, and I was amazed to see that the horn is a cast pot metal plate, the push button bar, which is then upholstered, and then it's got, you know, springs and guides and contacts where it contacts the steel frame inside the steering wheel. So, I mean, you wonder why cars are so much lighter today. The wheel itself on this thing, you know, it's got to weigh several pounds worth
of
stuff. But none of it was like perfect shape outside of being a little corroded, you know.
Okay.
Nothing was worn out or anything.
Cool.
So I filed down the little contacts. And then, of course, when you push the horn, it completes a circuit, and there's a little contactor on a spring that goes down the column, and that completes a circuit and lights off the horn. And I pulled that spring out, and I looked at that contact, and it's brass, and it's, bronze colored anyway, and it was all corroded. So filed that off a little bit, a little grease down there, put it all back together, boom, horn works perfect.
Solid, man. Well done. Yeah, well done.
Was. So I didn't need to get under the dash.
But now you know you can kind of get under there if you need to.
Now I know to have somebody else do that.
Yeah. Well, I did a little work on the GTO on Sunday. Well, I tried to anyway. Yeah. I've been fighting with a gas gauge issue for ever since I've had the car. So ever since my old man had the car. What would happen is if I have more than a quarter tank of gas in there or so, the gauge reads full. And when I get past that quarter part, the gauge will start kind of moving as the gas is sloshing around, right? Mm-hmm. It'll go from full to empty and nowhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're empty, it's empty. Mm-hmm. So I figured, I'm like, well, it's probably the sending unit. There's probably a dead spot on the variable resistor that the float contacts. So I pulled the tank down, and luckily I was about out of gas when I did this, so the tank wasn't that bad to deal with.
Good,
so,
good plan. Yeah.
So I pulled the tank down. I got the old sender out. I put the new one in. I replaced all the fuel hose and the vent hose and all that because it was pretty all beat up. I got it all put back in there, and I kind of wire wheeled the spot on the body where the ground was, so to make sure I had a good ground. But I did notice that where the connection on the sender itself, like a little brass, looks like a brass threaded connector, that the connector kind of slides onto, it was a little bit larger than the stock sender was. So I kind of I was filing down that the part on the sender to make that electrical connection fit. And I kind of got it to muscle on there, and I checked the gauge, and the gauge still doesn't work. And I put about 4 gallons of gas in it, four and a half gallons of gas in there from I got from the gas station. But the gauge still
should be showing.
Yeah, it's not showing anything. It should be showing something with that bit of gas in there. So I don't know if I'm getting a good connection, because I think if it's open, it's going to read empty. And if you short it, it's going to read full. But I didn't try shorting it to see if it reads full or not. But I might try to kind of use a jumper wire to make sure I'm connecting onto the connector on the sender and into the harness, just to make sure I have a good electrical connection. That'll be my next step. But it was getting late on Sunday, and I was pretty much smoked. So I said, that's it. That's it.
Well, but you've definitely acquired better perspective of what's going on. You got a new sender in there.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely did not achieve a state of flow working on that one.
Yeah, it gets tricky, but
yeah. And getting that gas tank back in there was not fun. Even with it kind of empty, it's just really unwieldy, and a little bit of liquid in there sloshing around really takes everything off balance. And
oh yeah,
trying to hold it and get the strap started, and this, and then the stud that the strap connects to just slides in and out of the frame, and it's always sliding out. And
yep.
I'm like, yeah. So I finally had to call my wife Jenny to
here, go into the car and put the gas tank in.
Yeah, well, I'm holding it up, and I had to slide the my floor jack under there and jack it up just to kind of hold it in place while I could get it in there and get the strap started. So I appreciated that. Thank you, my love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll monkey with it some more, probably later this week.
Well, that's good. It's, and hopefully you don't find the same thing I did, that the problem's at the other end. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, based on what I was seeing, I can't help but think that it's, I mean, it could be the gauge. You never know. But it just feels like it's the sender.
The way the needle's moving, I would think so. So, well, good. This past week, I received my new rear sway bar for the Gallagher, for the Riv.
Riv.
That I ordered 6 months ago.
Holy cats.
Yeah, I ordered a pair of them. I ordered an upsize front and a rear, and they come directly from the manufacturer. And the rear showed up, and the front's not supposed to be here for another week or so.
No, brother.
So we're all in the same boat about getting parts. You know, it's so I'm looking forward to that little project because those make a big difference on these cars.
Does it have? Oh, so it doesn't have a rear sway bar currently.
Correct. No, okay. No rear.
Okay. Did they ever come with one stock?
No.
No, okay.
No, it's interesting because it's a three-link rear end with a Panhard bar named after the
named
French
after
company.
The frying pan? Yeah. Okay.
They call it a track bar in New York language. And the upper control arm is adjustable from the factory.
Cool.
It's full of holes, and it's a two-piece, and you slide it forward or back and just pick a different set of holes to set your pinion angle because the car has a CV joint in the middle of a two-piece drive shaft. So there's room for adjustment in there.
That's cool.
But the lower two control arms are the same as a Chevelle or a GTO.
Okay.
It's the same part. So these are not boxed. And to put that sway bar on, I prefer a boxed arm. There's only one company, it's Adco, that makes the sway bar. And it's a good bar, but it's not like the world's most perfect fit.
Oh.
Just the dimension, the width and everything. And I don't know if it's something that is half adapted from something else or whatnot. But I think I'm going to go in our fab shop and I'm going to box these arms and make some mounts for it. And get that thing installed and then put the bigger one on in front. And it, like I said, it'll make a big difference. And pro tip, you never want to put a rear bar on if you don't have a front one. That's bad. Your car will go ass over tea kettle before
is that
you
right?
expect. Yeah, the rear end will spin right around and you won't know what hit you.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, your rear suspension needs to be as equally compliant as the front.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. So that's why I'm resisting the urge to put that one on now as I wait. I'm going to do them both at the same time.
All right. Well, what's the... But it has a front sway bar, correct?
It does. Okay. But the rear one would be bigger than the front.
Oh, I see. And it'll still kind of unsettle it a bit then, eh?
Yeah. It's an inch rear bar. And I think it's a 7/8 front bar stock.
That's 3/4. Sounds about right. I think my GTO stock was about 7/8, and I got a 1 1/4 is what's on there right now.
Yeah, I got the one that's coming is it's a 1 1/4 or 1 3/8 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be good.
Cool, man. Well, we got things going here.
Lots of stuff going. Always stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
And now people want to know the answers to our trivia question.
Trivia answers, they sure do. And we're gonna not disappoint this time. So,
this
Kevin,
time,
this
promise.
Time. So, Kevin, I asked you who was the driver for Alfa Romeo before founding his own company. And after a little pausing just to make sure I wasn't trick questioning you, you said the only thing coming to mind is Enzo Ferrari. And by golly, that's correct.
Hey,
Enzo Ferrari is
right
the correct
on.
Answer. Nicely done.
I haven't been right in a while, I don't think, so that's good.
Yeah.
At least not solidly right like that.
Right, right.
Which was luck. But
with authority.
Whatever. I'll take it.
Good deal.
All right, well, I had asked you, what American car company sold the Firefly? And the bonus was, who built it? And you said, with authority, Studebaker, and it was also built by Studebaker.
Mm.
And unfortunately.
Oh, man. Thanks. I was going to get it right for a second.
Not correct. The actual company that sold it was a company called Pontiac of
Shut
Canada.
Your mouth.
Yeah. It's a Canadian Pontiac. And the platform was Suzuki. So it was the Canadian Pontiac brother to the Geo Metro and Suzuki Swift.
Oh, my gosh. Good heavens, man.
Available between 85 and 91, and then back on the market in 94 to 2001. And I figured it was timely. You know, nice high fuel economy Pontiac is what everybody wants right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not that one. But
no, definitely not that one. That hurts, man. Ouch. Ouch, man. Okay.
You know, I
see how this is now.
I was halfway expecting, you know, just the default, I don't know, let's say Pontiac.
Yeah, that'd be neat. Yeah. Well, the thought did cross my mind, but I'm like, I never heard of a Firefly, and you threw me off. Because you said American Car Company, you jag.
Well, it's not like Lego tires are crying out loud.
All right, you got me back. All right.
That was something.
I got to tell you, our good friend Alex Gerhardt, who gave us that question about the Legos, he messaged me afterwards. He's like, yeah, we got him.
Yeah, you'll get yours, Alex.
Yeah, and your little dog, too.
That's right. And your little Legos, too.
Your little Lego dog, too. Good Lord.
All right. Well, this was fun. Yeah. I like these episodes where, you know, a plan is hatched and yet another plan has been hatched.
How about that? Good stuff.
Yeah. No idea we can make that happen, but
yep.
We'll see. If you sat through this whole show and you still think you can handle more, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We kind of bounce around in the charts on the Apple Podcast thing. Mm-hmm. We don't bounce all the way to number one, but we bounce, you know.
That would bounce, be a hell of a bounce.
We don't bounce all the way out either, no. So that's good.
No.
So every little bit helps there. We appreciate that. And keep your eye on the V8Radio.com page. Like I said, there's fun things to do there. You can add commentary or, you know, Facebook or any of the other socials. We're happy to hear from you. And I think that's about it as far as what I got.
Yeah, that's what I got. I'm good.
All right, man. Well, for Mr. Mike Hubal Clark, I'm Kevin Oostie reminding you to aim for the moon.
Oh, man. Right on.
And we will talk to you next time on VA Radio.